Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 o'clock. My dad will call in and tell a jokey time, and we have a very disappointing Blackhawks Express to play back from yesterday's game against Detroit. That's coming up. But a very special show this morning, as we do annually. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review all the new movies for the weekend, and we talk about box office, and we do that all year long. And then usually right at the beginning of the year, we get together live in studio. Eric and Colin come down live in studio, and we take apart the movie year. Bests, worsts, best films, worst films, performances, a bunch of subcategories. And this is that morning. And we always have a fun time. I always look forward to it. And Eric and Colin are here. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Welcome back. Another year.
Yep.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk in general. Colin, what do you think of 2017 in general as a movie year?
I think it's pretty strong. You know, we hear a lot that, you know, Hollywood is out of ideas and, you know, there's nothing original anymore. It's all sequels and remakes and franchises and all that stuff. And that's very easy to get into that mindset when you go to the box office and that's mainly what you see. But looking at my top 20 list and a lot of the movies that didn't make my top 20 but almost did, I thought there was a lot this year that was just really a lot of original ideas fully explored. You know, just there's just high concept ideas that were made by, you know, with a real intellectual you know, thought behind them, and that, you know, started really interesting conversations. And so I thought 2017 was pretty strong.
I did too. Eric, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we ask this question every year, and, you know, we think, you know, during the year, we see a lot of movies that are mediocre, don't really, aren't going to fit into the show, really. But then we do the show, and then we have 20, 25, even 30 movies that, you know, are really rise to the cream of the crop, rise to the top, that is. And I think that this year, particularly, because of everything that's gone on culturally within Hollywood and the way that some movies have stood out because of that, I think this is a year we're going to remember for a very long time as the year things changed. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, some of the movies that are going to get brought up tonight are going to be a part of that conversation, and I think that we might not see the change for another year and a half, 2 years, potentially, in the product that we see, or the art that we see, I should say. But I think that we're going to look back on 2017 as a very seminal year for movies.
I can say this. This is kind of the most I struggled with picking slots and what movies would be. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I switched rankings out and off and on it. I mean, it was just nuts.
Yeah.
I had to actually stop at one point and go, okay, this is it. This is the list.
Yeah, me too.
It'll change tomorrow.
And a lot of really, I think a lot of really great films came out this year. And there are some that didn't make my top 20. And we each, by the way, will go through our top 20 titles, starting out at number 20 and going up to number one for our pick of best movie of 2017. But yeah, it was tough to figure it out. You know, every year there's always a challenge. But for some reason, the leaving a few movies off the list was hurt.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? Like, man, that was a damn good movie too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I find that this list of 20 are pretty special movies. I think there's a lot of amazing film that came out this year, or 2017. So. All right, I'll start it out, number 20, and then we'll go around to Colin and then Eric, as we always do, round the circle. So let's start it out. My 20th favorite movie, number 20 on my list, is The Killing of a Sacred Deer. One of the craziest movies of the year. And Nicole Kidman had a pretty interesting year, film and television, considering Big Little Lies as well. Strong year for her, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of The Beguiled, but, like, you know, both of the movies that she starred with Colin Farrell were weird, man. And but this is—it's a hard movie to describe as to what it's about. So The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I don't know what to say. I found it to be really, obviously, very unsettling. I mean, a really unsettling movie, and it has a real hypnotic effect. I loved The Lobster. I like this even more. I think this is an even better movie than The Lobster.
Keep recommending it to your listeners. They will thank you for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Anyway, so that's my number 20, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Colin, what about you?
My number 20 is Columbus, a movie that we showed at our film festival.
Didn't make my... Another one of those damn movies that did not make 20.
It's right there. It was...
It's so good.
It is so good. And it's very quiet, very low key, and very, very real. And I don't mean, you know, just, oh, it's so realistic, but I mean, it's just real. It's just, it, there's not a false emotion in it. There's not a false sentiment in it. Koganada is the director, and this is a guy to watch. You know, he was just with these two characters in this really interesting town, this art that is full of rich architecture, and the movie really knows how to bring that to life without doing it in a, you know, pompous or over the top way, but just, it's a movie that is just beautiful moments of stillness and calm, and centered with two great performances. So
yeah,
and a really moving climax.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay. All right, Colin, or Eric?
Yeah. So we went from a very quiet, still movie to one of the most manic movies of 2017, and that's the Lego Batman movie.
Oh, wow.
Made my list.
Wow.
I watched this movie again a few weeks ago, and it would be very easy for them to do a spin-off of the Lego movie with the Batman character, who is obviously a standout in that, and just, you know, make a few bucks like they tried to do with the Ninjago movie and failed. But they really crafted not just a really great Lego movie, but they created a really great Batman movie out of this. They really found an angle to the Batman character that hadn't really been explored in full in this way before. And on top of that, it is incredibly funny. Will Arnett's hilarious as Batman. All the voice work, you know, throughout the film is really funny. It is like I said, it is crazy manic. There's just stuff popping off the screen all the time. It's actually, you know, yeah, it's my number 20.
Okay. As, you know, between that and BoJack Horseman, Will Arnett does fantastic voice work. I mean, he really does. And obviously, he's got one of the most distinctive voices in the world. But, like, the stuff that he does on BoJack is funny.
I still have to catch up with that.
It's so good.
Such a great show.
It is a great show, yeah. Okay, so there's our number 20. Let's go to number 19. Number 19 on my list is Blade Runner 2049, which... I'm surprised it's that low on my list, but it's a great follow-up to the original Blade Runner. Blade Runner is my favorite science fiction movie ever made. I was a little leery of it when I first heard about it, but I thought it was beautifully handled. It took all the themes that we all loved about what Blade Runner was about and really expounded upon them without giving away too much, without, you know, taking away the secrets or the arguments that we all have about the original the original movie with its 27 different versions. That Ryan Gosling was really, really good in this movie. Like a great, great, great performance. A tough role, too. And again, I don't know how much we can talk about. I mean, the movie came out in October. But there's a big plot point that involves Ryan Gosling's character that I don't know if I should give away. I don't think a lot of people saw it yet because it didn't make any money at the box office. I thought bringing back Harrison Ford was really great. Their scenes together are great. Jared Leto was creepy. All the women in it were terrific, and it came up with so many, and it had so many new ideas. It goes without saying that the production design, the special effects, and especially the cinematography. It's a breathtaking looking movie. It's really long, but I was never bored with it. It was full of ideas, and I stayed with it from frame one to the end, and I really loved it, and it's 19 on my list, Blade Runner 2049. All right, Colin.
My number 19 is Mudbound. And when we get to our subcategories, which I know we're doing as a separate podcast, you know, we have one of our categories is movies that deserved a better fate. And I'm in mixed opinion on, you know, what happened with Mudbound. On one hand, great, it's on Netflix. Everybody can see it who has Netflix. On the other hand, it really should be seen on a big screen. It's a beautiful cinematic film. Really captures the time period really well. Great ensemble cast throughout the whole thing. Dee Reese is a director who's made good on her promising debut of Pariah many years ago. And this is a really great ensemble historical drama that really should be seen on a bigger screen and on as big a screen as possible. But at least it's out there, I guess. You know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
And okay. Mainstream platform.
All right, and that's Mudbound number 19. All right, Eric.
My number 19 is another very manic film called Baby Driver. Edgar Wright's, you know, heist, you know, cops and robbers film, robbers film, basically, with Ansel Elgort, and creating this very unique construct where all of the action sequences, all the heist sequences are set specifically to songs on Baby's iPod. So the rhythms match. And it's a gimmick that never really feels overused in the film, each one is really even better than the last, I think. It's got a lot of energy. It's really fun. The performances are really good. There is someone in there that I guess we can't name anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But his fate, you know.
Yeah.
It's a really fun movie. It jumped up and down my list here and there, but I really love Edgar Wright stuff, and I thought he had a really fun time making this movie.
Okay. All right. So that's number 19 for Eric. Number 18, excuse me, on my list is Detroit, one of the most painfully overlooked movies of the year. Catherine Bigelow, we're talking about female directors who aren't getting acknowledged. Catherine Bigelow, you know, I mean, she's been acknowledged. She's the only woman to ever win a director Oscar. But this historical film about the riots in Detroit starts out one way and ends up another way, and I was with it all the way. It is an excruciatingly intense movie, like a lot of Catherine Bigelow's movies are. But this one was really heavy, and covering, you know, actual incidents that took place in Detroit during the riots, specifically an incident that took place at this Algiers motel that involved the cops and a bunch of African-American people having a party, based on, true incidents. And it starts out as sort of almost a documentary, just giving you the history of what had happened in Detroit leading up to that night. So in a very sort of docudrama kind of style, which, you know, has become Catherine Bigelow's sort of go-to style now, leading up to getting to know these people who are in this motel and the cops that show up, and then the legal stuff that comes afterwards. Again, this is a long movie, and it might be exhausting for some people to watch this movie because it's a challenging movie. It's a heavy movie. A lot of very unpleasant things happen in the film. And as I said, it's incredibly intense, and the performances are all good. Will Poulter is ridiculous in it, out of nowhere. I always picture him from We're the Millers, and then this thing comes out. Beautifully staged, very intense, and a really wonderful film. And I think, what happened to this movie? I mean, nobody went to see it.
There was a reaction to it. I think there was a very negative reaction, even from critics and pundits and things like that, that they took the movie in a different direction. They saw the movie in a different perspective, and it didn't get quite the love that, like, you and I had given it when it came out. It is a tough movie to watch.
It is, yeah. But it's rewarding, and it's really beautifully made, and Catherine Bigelow continues to be, you know, one of the top directors. Okay, guys, hang on. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll get Colin's number 18, and we'll go all the way up. We're doing the best movies of the year, our top 20 lists, and we'll do more right after we take this break. I'm 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower, and it's our year-end show, the best and worst films of 2017. And so we'll be featuring some music from those movies that we will be discussing. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me and for our annual show here. And this is a beautiful score from Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water, which I'm sure at some point will be talked about here on the year-end show. Colin and Eric are here, and we were just going through our 20. Number 20 for me was Killing of a Sacred Deer. Number 19, Blade Runner 2049. Number 18, Detroit. For me, best of. Colin, what are 20 and 19 for you?
20, Columbus. 19, Mudbound.
And Eric?
20, Lego Batman Movie. And 19, Baby Driver.
Okay. Number 18, Colin, what is yours?
My number 18 is Wonder, a movie I saw a second time a couple weeks ago because I just thought after the first time I kind of needed to get out of my head, you know, when I first saw it, having just finished the book having a personal connection to the film. Now I can just watch it as a film. And really had a greater appreciation for what Stephen Chbosky really pulled off with this thing. It is, in many ways, an improvement on the book. The characters are a little more fleshed out, more interesting in many ways. I think he's assembled a phenomenal young cast of unknowns. I mean, Jacob Tremblay's not an unknown anymore, but everybody else around him is really terrific, especially the older sister. And I think Jacob Tremblay is great in it, just acting through the layers of makeup that he's on. And the makeup job is so good, you just don't even realize that it's, you know, that it is a makeup job, which I think is, you know, really key to one of the things that makes this movie work so well. You know, I love Owen Wilson and Julia Roberts in it. They're like real, you know, they remind me of real parents. And the teachers and faculty in this movie act like real teachers and faculty. So there's like a lot of things about this movie that I appreciate from scene to scene that, you know, could have just, this movie could have just been the sappiest after school special movie. It could have just been a really lazy adaptation. But Stephen Chbosky really made a movie that is a great companion piece to his last film, Perks of Being a Wallflower. And I mean, he just really gets everything right in a way that, you know, a lot of directors would have cut corners on a lot of things in this film.
Okay.
So I wonder, is my number 18.
Okay. Eric.
My number 18 is Mudbound. Dee Rees' story of the 1940s, racial strife and wartime in the South. And maybe it's a little higher on my list than Colin's because I did get a chance to see it on the big screen at Sundance back in January. And, yeah, the cinematography of the movie, it really is a striking piece of work. And the thing that I was reminded of when I was watching it the second time is that it took me a little while to get into it because the way they introduce all the characters, everyone has their inner monologue for the first 45 minutes, maybe even first hour of the movie. And, you know, I'm not saying it's Terrence Malick-like, but I got to this, I'm just like, okay, now this person's talking, and there's like eight people who get like inner monologues in the first hour. But once it settles into that, and once it sort of sets itself up, and I think once the guys get back from war, the movie turns into something really extraordinary and also very ugly. I mean, it's, you know, it works hand in hand with Detroit in some respects, but really, really, really well acted by everyone involved. Garrett Hedlund.
Yes,
yeah. I always get Garrett Hedlund and Charlie Hunnam confused for some reason. but Garrett Hedlund, best thing he's ever done. I think terrific. Jason Mitchell, really good. Mary J. Blige, unrecognizable and very good.
Great.
In the movie.
Yeah, absolutely great. So that's number 18. Number 17 on my list is a movie that was, I believe, in theaters for 22 minutes and then gone. And it's Brad Status. Mike White's great character study, with maybe my favorite Ben Stiller performance of all time. He's so good in this movie. He plays a father who's taking his son on a trip to check out some colleges. And the relationship between he and his son is really what the movie is about. But it's also about this guy, you know, thinking about what he's done with his life, comparing himself to the guys that he went to college with or the guys that he knew who have become so successful. Why am I blanking on his name from Flight of the Conchords? Jermaine Clement is hilarious in the movie as a guy who's made it really, really big and lives like on an island with two chicks. Luke Wilson has a really couple of wonderful scenes in the movie. Michael Sheen is really terrific in it. I like Mike White. That's all I'm sorry. I like the way he writes. I like the way he directs movies. Mark Mothersbaugh, who from Devo, you know, did the music, and it's very similar to all the music that has ever been in a Mike White movie. It's very much Brad Status, very much stylistically, obviously, it's very much like Enlightened, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And I respond to the way that Mike White writes strongly. And I also like the way he directs movies, too. He also wrote a really terrific movie that didn't make my top 20 called Beatrice at Dinner with Selma Hayek's best performance ever. John Lithgow was amazing in it. It just I like Brad's status a little bit better. But he did two. He wrote two great scripts that nobody saw, which is really too bad. But Brad's status, number 17 on my list.
My number 17 was a movie I caught up with later in the year that came out, I think, back in April or May. And the last thing I need at the end of the year is another biopic. But based on everyone's reaction to A Quiet Passion, I decided to watch it, and it really blew me away. Mm. This is Terrence Davies' movie about Emily Dickinson, starring Cynthia Nixon as Emily Dickinson. And I was just totally drawn into this movie, really sucked in, and really just got a good sense of who Emily Dickinson was. I never really like studied her or anything like that. But I really just, this was one of the best biopics I've ever seen. It's just, it's alive, it's funny, it's sad, it's tragic, it's beautiful. It's really kind of too bad it's just kind of been forgotten, except for, like, you know, critic top 10 lists.
I've noticed that Terrence Davies, who is an extraordinary filmmaker,
yeah,
a lot of his movies, you know, he's making movies.
Yeah,
people forget that Terrence Davies is still making movies.
Right.
You know, there was a time when his movies were more seen, mm-hmm, by people. I mean, he's directed some extraordinary movies, This is a really strong. Oh, yeah. It's a really strong movie too. But I just think that his name has been ignored over the years.
It has, and this was one I think that again deserved a better fate.
Yeah.
But I mean, it did okay. Right? I mean, for a little art house film, but I think it could have done better. So yeah, Quiet Passion.
Okay, that's number 17 for you, Eric.
17 for me is a film that I wasn't sure was going to make my top 20 list, and when you hear the title, it's going to surprise probably both of you. It was a film that I liked very much, but seeing it the second time, I really got into the craft and the performances even more so the second time, and that's Steven Spielberg's The Post. You're laughing already.
You said it was going to surprise me.
Yeah.
The Spielberg movie in your top 20 is
no,
not
but that low.
No, that are, well, yeah, well,
it's
one
that
is that low.
Low.
Oh, okay. I missed that part.
And the possibility that it might not have been in there at all. If this didn't show up in my top 20, you would have sent me somewhere.
This is a shocking thing. I'm not to give too much away, but I ranked a Spielberg movie higher than Eric this
there
year.
There you go.
So that right. I tell you something.
There you
right
go.
There.
It's a surprise. All right.
Okay. So now we're all clear on what the surprise is. Okay. I can talk about how good this movie is. I mentioned it, you know, we talked about it just last week, how great Spielberg has, I mean, he's been underappreciated in his handling of actors over the years, and now he's got one of the biggest ensembles that he's ever crafted, and at the front has two of the biggest names ever in movies, Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. Their scenes together are terrific. Meryl Streep hasn't been this good in 15 years. There's this whole scene, I mean, the whole moment when once they get the Pentagon Papers and they're in the house and they're trying to organize everything and the lawyers are coming over, the way Spielberg puts all these people in the room and handles this scene and quietly builds suspense in it. We know it's going to get published. We know it's going to get published. But they have this phone call where everybody's on like six phones in every house and the camera moves in on Meryl Streep. And I watched that scene and my heart was doing this. In that moment, I'm just like, wow. This had a bigger impact on me the second time that I saw it than the first time. Okay, it is still number 17 on my list, but it is a very good Steven Spielberg movie, The Post.
All right, number 16 on my list is Logan, which might be my favorite comic book movie ever made. It's Hugh Jackman going back to play Wolverine for the 4,000th time, but in a completely different way, in a completely different style. James Mangold has made a really remarkably deep and significant movie that's more influenced by dramas and westerns than by comic book movies per se. Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman are both incredible in it, like really great performances with a lot of emotion, and the fight scenes are spectacular. Everybody knows it was rated R, it was full of violence. But there was a lot of emotion in this movie. And the little girl, why am I blanking on her name?
Daphne Keene.
She was amazing in it. Great villains, great story, lots of emotion. I've seen it 3 times and I cry at the end every time I see it. And I never expected to go see a Wolverine movie where at the end I would be so emotionally devastated that I would cry. I don't expect that from comic book movies, but this is an atypical comic book movie. And again, any other year, this movie would have been, I think, much higher on my list. But there are so many great movies that came out this year, and this is a great movie, a truly great movie. And I think everybody involved should be congratulated, and I hope they make more movies like this in the comic book world. And I hope that this movie is influential in that regard, and I think it might be. So, Logan, number 16 on my list.
My number 16 is, you know, when I was saying at the beginning about movies that had, you know, great original concepts that were explored to their fullest potential, then my next two films are what I'm talking about. My number 16 is almost a comic book movie, too, but it's not, but it's Colossal, which is a movie that just has a great idea for a monster movie and a great idea for a movie about alcoholism and codependency. This is a movie that really explores all those things in a really unique and fascinating way. I saw it a second time, you know, it came out back in April, I think, and I saw it a second time like a couple weeks ago, and having forgotten about a lot that happens in it, so it surprised me all over again. Like, it's like, I forgot what happens here. What happens here? And it's like having that feeling and being like, oh, this is really holding up great. Like, you know, that I can have this experience again watching this thing because it is so unique and so original and takes so many great twists. And Anne Hathaway is amazing in it. And so, yeah, 16 is Colossal.
And you have to love the fact that the director of this movie's first name is maybe one of the best snack treats of all time.
Nacho.
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 All right, we got a break, and then we'll come back. Eric, we'll get your number 16. Right. That's what's happening. Yeah, I should leave my mic on. So we're going to take a quick break. We come back and we'll continue with the best movies of the year. We have the worst movies of the year coming up. We have performances and subcategories and all that cool stuff. We do it every year. Eric and Colin come down and we discuss the movie year. And we're doing that right now with the best movies of 2017. And we'll return after this. Welcome back, everybody. We're doing our annual wrap up of the year, the best and worst and everything related to the movies of 2017. This is from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Carter Burwell's Morricone tinged score. Colin Suter, Eric Childress, and I are reviewing the films of 2017. Eric, tell us what your number 16 is.
Okay, my number 16, going from sort of one unique take on a romantic comedy of sorts from Colossal to another one that came out last year called The Big Sick. It's Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon's really true life romance tale, how they met, how she ended up getting sick, and how this movie then turns into basically a romantic comedy with her parents, between Kumail and her parents, played fantastically by Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. I saw this movie at Sundance, and you never know how some of these movies are going to go, but this one was constantly surprising. I mean, Judd Apatow produced the movie. I think it does get a little bit long in the tooth in the third act a little bit, but there's a lot of different structures going on in this movie, with this, from his family dynamic to the actual romance to the relationship with the parents to even, you know, some like medical stuff
and the stand-up stuff
strong, which is man. Very funny. Yeah, yeah. I mean usually stand-up in movies is usually pretty bad, but here in the stand-up the material is really good, particularly the backstage
Absolutely.
Stuff is really Greer, really funny,
man. David Allen Greer.
What are you doing in the bathroom? Kumail is really good in the movie. Zoe Kazan, who plays Emily, is also really good. I don't think she's ever been more charming in a movie that she is here. And real. I mean, there's a real dynamic in the ups and downs that go throughout this relationship, particularly in the third act. Really strong work. And again, I can't praise Hunter and Romano enough. I would like to see a spinoff movie just with that relationship. I'd be fine with that. Yeah. The Big Six.
Okay, Big Six. All right, now we're moving into the top 15. My number 15 is Steven Spielberg's The Post.
There we go.
I think it's his best movie since Minority Report, so 15 years. Everything. I echo everything that Eric said about just how well made it is and how the story is told so magnificently in terms of building suspense. And, you know, it's under 2 hours. And a lot happens in this almost 2 hours. And it's exciting, and it's vivid, and it's important. And everybody, you know, we're talking about how timely this movie is and how quickly Spielberg made it, which is also very impressive, considering they shot this movie in July, and he got it out in December. And I, you know, not quite as impressive Ridley Scott, you know, replacing a guy and doing it in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, you can't argue this ensemble, and the movie is very, very important to talk about right now. It's about what's happening in this world right now, what's happening to journalism, what's happening to the press, and how important it is, and a president trying to shut down freedom of expression. You know, everybody in it is great. It's really beautifully paced. It's as exciting a movie about journalism. I rank it right up there with Shattered Glass and All the President's Men. I think it ranks up. It deserves to be ranked.
Spotlight, too.
And Spotlight, yes. Spotlight, terrific movie. And so it works on that level, and I also I adore how he handles the Nixon stuff in the movie. Like, Nixon is played by Nixon, like real Nixon, and I think that how he incorporates that in this movie is brilliant, and it adds a real authenticity to it and a strangeness to it. So I just find this movie, on the simplest of terms, it's damned entertaining, and it just moves, and it's beautifully acted. So The Post is number 15 on my list.
My number 15 is also culturally relevant, and this is probably too low by many standards, but Get Out, Jordan Peele's movie that, again, takes a very simple idea and explores it to its fullest potential. Really just kind of came out of nowhere. This was a success story. This is like kind of the first success story.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not a question. This and Wonder Woman are the two huge success stories, I think, in terms of what they did culturally and you know, and what it meant, the success of both of those things.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, I'm glad that it is stood the test of time, so to speak, in terms of, you know, year-end recognition. It holds up beautifully on multiple viewings. I love what the mood that Jordan Peele creates with this movie, the sense of foreboding, and yet you're just kind of laughing at certain moments too. And it's just it'd be really interesting to go back and watch it again a few years from now and see, you know, is it still like this? And probably will be. But this is really a great film.
Shockingly, did not make my top 20.
That is shocking.
That is shocking. I am stunned.
That actually, spoiler
alert.
I thought
right there.
15. Uh oh.
Yeah. No. It didn't make my top 20.
Man, it didn't make mine either.
No. Right. Okay. Yeah. So you liked it the most. Well, I know. Listen, I love it. Trust. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an incredibly entertaining
film.
Movie. Yeah, it's a very, very good movie, and I couldn't be happier for Jordan Peele.
Oh, please.
I couldn't be happier for him. But yeah, it just didn't make the top 20.
This is more shocking than Spielberg being 17.
Oh, it actually is. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 15 for you, Eric.
15 for me is probably what I thought was the most unsettling movie of 2017, and that's It Comes at Night. Mm-hmm. This really economical, post-apocalyptic thriller where seemingly everyone on the planet has died from some sort of virus, some sort of sickness that has gone around, and a family with Joel Edgerton in the forest, you know, are trying to survive, and then another family shows up. And, you know, we talk about all the different things that movies, you know, when we look back upon this year, and we think about trust, and we think about how people are going to help each other when, you know, I mean, imagine what happened in Hawaii this past weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, what would have had we could have had an It Comes at Night situation there. And And watching this film, and you just you want to root for everyone in the movie. You understand everyone's point of view in the film. You want these people to be able to coexist with one another, but you understand the risks involved. And when things, you know, just naturally, not through really any fault of anyone in the movie, you know, on purpose anyway, things just get to a point where we just realize that humanity might be doomed. And by the end of this movie, and I know, you know, it has one of those abrupt endings that probably scared a lot of people off and left a lot of people walking out angry.
Pissed off everybody in the theater I saw.
There you go. There you go. But I admire this movie. Why am I blanking on the director's name? Trisha?
Yeah, I know, and
I'm blanking.
Oh, I feel horrible because I've communicated with him. I apologize. I will make that up to you.
Yeah.
But he made a movie called Krisha that was on, I think, a couple of our lists last year,
yeah,
which is still not available on DVD, by the way.
That's terrible.
Trey Edward Schultz.
Okay. Thank you. Trey Edward Schultz. This is a guy. This is a filmmaker to watch. I think this is a remarkable piece of work.
Okay. All right, we're going to break here. We got more coming up right after the news here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. There's music from the movie that just shocked everybody in the room because it didn't make my top 20, but I loved it. That's from Get Out.
Didn't the cat movie make your top 20 last year? What was that?
It did, Keanu, yeah.
Wait.
Keanu made my top 20, yeah.
Did it really?
It did.
Yes, it did. Yeah. See?
Wow.
Okay.
The cat movie.
I couldn't remember the name of it. I was like,
I'm thinking Ketty? No, that was this year.
The 3-star cat movie that they did.
Yeah.
It was good, but, you know.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
All right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Colin and Eric are here live in studio. We do this every year. We talk about the best, the worst, and everything in between when it comes to the movie year. And these are the best movies of 2017, and we're up to number 14 now, so let's do another quick recap before we jump back into the list. My number 20 is The Killing of a Sacred Deer, 19 Blade Runner 2049, 18 Detroit, 17 Brad Status, 16 Logan, 15 The Post. All right, Colin?
20 Columbus, 19 Mudbound, 18 Wonder, 17 A Quiet Passion, 16 Colossal, 15 Get Out.
All right, and Eric?
20 The Lego Batman Movie, 19 Baby Driver, 18 Mudbound, 17 The Post, 16 The Big Sick, and 15 It Comes at Night.
Okay, so now we're starting around the top 14. I'll give you mine. Number 14 is Wonder.
Nice.
Probably the biggest surprise for me of the year, considering how treacly the trailer was. And, like, the subject matter, I was like, oh, God, this is just going to be... It's a wonderful movie. And very emotional. I cried 50 times during it. My parents put together a list of their favorite movies. I asked them to have a discussion. Without question, this was their favorite movie of the year. Without question. So beautifully acted, beautifully told, and it really kind of had no business being as emotional as it was, considering that it could have gone south, as we've mentioned before. You mentioned the older sister, and I don't have the actress's name in front of me, but she's great in this movie. She is phenomenal, and there are a lot of very emotional moments in the movie. Emotional moments that have to do with Augie, the main character, in the parents and the family dog, but the moment for me is the Our Town moment, where she's in the play. It destroyed me. But it is a beautiful movie that anybody can see. It's family friendly. It's a PG rated movie. I've not read the book. I have not read the book, but I have to say that this is a pretty extraordinarily powerful and a really wonderful movie. So Wonder, number 14 on my list. All right.
Mine is on the opposite end of the spectrum as far as like feeling good. My number 14 is a movie that I don't think it's open in Chicago yet, and I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Loveless.
I've seen it.
You've seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is not a feel-good movie.
No. Nope.
No. It's from a Russian director whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce. It's about a couple going through a divorce, and their son disappears during one of their arguments, and they have to team up and find him. This is, you know, one of those movies where I just kind of popped in the screener and kind of expected to be just kind of bored a little bit because I wasn't crazy about this guy's last film. But this was one of those movies that just sucked me right in, and by the end I was just like, wow, I didn't look at my watch once during this. I was totally riveted from beginning to end by all the great performances and all the kind of twists and turns the story takes, and I was really invested in this couple. And it just, when it was over, I was like, that's the movie I'm going to root for best foreign film, I guess. I'm eager to see it come out finally, and people should check it out when it does. Loveless.
Okay. 14 for you, Eric.
I'm going to steer the conversation even further away from Wonder and further away from Loveless, probably even. My number 14 is Mother. Darren Aronofsky's insane movie that defies easy description. After you see the movie, though, you will see a lot of religious context. You'll see, if you've ever even a rudimentary study of the Bible, particularly the Old Testament. I mean, the movie's sort of divided into an Old Testament and New Testament kind of feel. And, I mean, the movie is entirely metaphorical, but what really makes this movie stand apart is the craftsmanship of it. I still don't know how he was able to pull off this, which for me, watching this movie, when I saw it, it was, I described it as a living nightmare, because it felt like a fever dream of claustrophobia and being trapped in... It felt like being trapped in a nightmare, which is, to me, is as the best kind of horror movie. Movies that really do unsettle you. It's darkly funny in spots. Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer are really entertaining in the movie. I know a lot of people like to focus on the artist aspect of this. I like to focus it as, you know, very obviously God and Mother Nature, as I think Aronofsky intended. But I will continue to recommend this movie. I don't care how much you hate me once you see it, but just watch the craftsmanship of it, because I don't know how he pulled off some of this stuff. It's pretty amazing.
And it's still my favorite review that my father gave all year. The credits pop up at the end of the movie. Aronofsky's name pops up. My dad just goes, "Well, that was different."
Yeah. That's
the fact that I went with my parents to see that movie.
Exactly.
It's our Saturday afternoon little movie. We're going to see Mother. And my dad, "Well, that was different."
Yeah.
All right. Where are we? Number 13. Number 13, The Shape of Water, on my list. You know, I know it's a little bit low for a lot of people. People have gone a little bit crazy over this movie. The first time I saw it, I went a little crazy, and then I watched it the second time, and I saw a little bit more of the stuff that doesn't quite work as well. Guillermo del Toro's another weird creature fantasy movie, the kind of stuff that he always makes, but I think this might be one of the best movies he's ever made. And it stars Sally Hawkins as a mute custodian who works in this secret government lab where there is this creature, amphibious sort of creature that she becomes involved with. And then it spirals into a romance. It's a Cold War thriller. Michael Shannon is the villain. Richard Jenkins is the weird neighbor. And it, for some reason, it shouldn't, but it works. It works beautifully. It is gorgeously photographed. A movie about a woman who is romantically linked with a fish is a little weird. It's also very violent and R-rated. I mean, it has that sense of fairytalism that, you know, Del Toro puts in a lot of his movies, but he doesn't shy away from violence or adult situations or sexual situations, as is the case with this movie. And that's a tone that I don't know if any other director is kind of capable of successfully doing that, like making a fairy tale, but for adults, like strictly for adults. Technically, it's just magnificent. The makeup effects that Doug Jones wears. Doug Jones, it's a good year for guys named Doug Jones. But he does weave this beautiful story. I mean, you know, Sally Hawkins, I think, is extraordinary in it. I think everybody is great in it. And then Michael Shannon. I mean, what are you going to say about Michael Shannon? He rules. And he's born to play roles like this. So all of these weird little styles that this movie has, it all works and it all comes together as, I think, a really sort of beautiful fairy tale that's very satisfying and I think one of the best movies of the year. So Shape of Water, number 13.
My number 13 is also kind of a fairy tale fantasy of sorts, and that's Pixar's Coco.
Didn't make my 20.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the second viewing that put it over the into the list for me. Pixar has this reputation of, oh, they make movies where people, we cry at them. Well, yeah, okay, but they earn it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Coco, is a movie that really earns it.
Yes,
and,
it does.
And, I mean, my God, that ending is so powerful.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It gets, the journey to that ending is a lot of fun and really filled with genuine heart and emotion. I was with this kid all the way. I love all the, you know, Book of the Dead stuff. I love, all the, just bringing that whole world to life and establishing the rules of it. And, you know, for people who, you know, don't know what all this stuff means. And it's just, I just applaud Pixar for taking a chance on this kind of storyline. And it's a beautiful, beautiful film that better win Best Song this year.
Well, you got that I'm a Showman movie.
Yeah,
oh, yeah
this
well,
is me, Colin. Come on.
Yeah. Oh.
This is me. Not remember me. This is me.
That's right. All right. Well, there you go. Coco, number 13. We got a break here.
Okay.
Eric, when we come back, we'll start with your 13th favorite film of 2017. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We shall return. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're talking about the best movies of 2017 as we do annually. Eric Childress, Colin Suter live in studio with me. That, of course, is from Call Me By Your Name. And Eric and Colin are here. And we'll do, again, a quick recap for those people who might have missed. My top 20 so far. Number 20, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. 19, Blade Runner 2049. 18, Detroit. 17, Brad Status. 16, Logan. 15, The Post. 14, Wonder. 13, The Shape of Water. All right, Colin, remind us.
20, Columbus. 19, Mudbound. 18, Wonder. 17, A Quiet Passion. 16, Colossal. 15, Get Out. 14, Loveless. 13, Coco. Good year for movies with one-word titles.
Yeah, yeah. Eric, remind us and then tell us what 13 is
okay.
for you.
Number 20, The Lego Batman Movie. 19, Baby Driver. 18, Mudbound. 17, The Post. 16, The Big Sick. 15, It Comes at Night. 14, Mother. And my number 13 is War for the Planet of the Apes.
Nice.
You know?
Didn't make my top 20, but...
I'm surprised at that, too, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talk about surprises. This has been a continual surprise ever since they rebooted this series, or prequelized it, or however you want to look at this thing. We've been in constant praise of this trilogy since it began, and I think an argument could be made. Maybe all three of us might have a different favorite of the three movies. This one happens to be mine. I think this one, the culmination.
Mine's Dawn.
Yours is Dawn and yours is Rise, right?
No, I think this one might be my favorite.
This one is your favorite, okay. Yeah.
They're all great, though.
Yeah. Perfect trilogy.
Yeah.
You talk about movies that have no business being this good. This came out of, you know, the detail in it, the respect that that Matt Reeves, you know, he did the last two, Matt Reeves, put in this thing. And this one, it's a Western that becomes Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
and Woody Harrelson plays your villain in the movie, a guy that needs to build a wall and keep out certain people. Jeez, I wonder if that's timely at all. There are obviously a lot of parallels. You could probably take parallels in any movie they were talking about and, you know, do that. But the film itself, it's remarkably done. It's a fantastic journey. This idea of Caesar, our hero, now succumbing to the same vengeful tactics that human emotions that we all have, and that the humans clearly have in the movie, and watching the humans and the apes go in the opposite direction of each other, and one becoming more ape-like, the other becoming more human-like, but in the wrong context, the worst qualities of each species. Again, it makes you think that humanity is doomed in some way, but at the same time, you're rooting, obviously you're on the side of the apes, which wasn't always the case in the Charlton Heston movie, but in this one, you're completely on the side of the apes, and I don't think it did as well at the box office, because I think people were expecting more war in this one. And there's not a lot of big battle sequences. There's a lot of wonderful set pieces and things like that, but there's a real emotionality to
and
this
and
movie.
The way that they handle, you know, the climax between the hero and the villain is totally unique.
Yes.
And unlike, it's not a big duel fight action thing at the end.
No.
That's not how the movie ends.
There's,
I think, maybe
empathy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that people didn't expect that. And
right.
Maybe we're a little disappointed by the fact that it didn't have a big slam bang.
Right.
The hero's going to kill the villain ending.
Right. I mean, because that's the way you want it to end.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it should end.
Absolutely.
It ends on a very completely satisfying conclusion to this trilogy. Like Colin said, I think this is as good a trilogy as we've had in many a year.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we're moving on. Number 12 on my list is The Big Sick, which was mentioned a little bit earlier. Kumail did a great job. He and his wife wrote this wonderful script based on their real relationship. And, you know, everything, I echo everything you said. Holly Hunter and Ray Romano are both tremendous in this movie. And I think, you know, because there have been so many great supporting performances this year, I have a bad feeling that they're both going to be ignored.
Hunter won't.
You think Hunter's going to get nominated?
I
hope she does. I hope she, because she deserves it.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
I think it's going to get Best Picture nomination.
Well, good. I'm happy about that. This is one of those movies that, you know, this is one of those movies where every once in a while, you know, I find myself defending the fact that everybody thinks that I hate romantic comedies. I don't hate romantic comedies. I hate bad ones. And there happen to be more bad ones than good ones. This is a good one, like a really good one, with wonderful performances and a fun story. It's emotional. It's also really insightful to another culture, to Pakistani culture, the way that, you know, his family life is introduced and how it dealt with within the movie adds a real layer to it. And then on top of the fact that it's like loaded with really funny people and there's a lot of great funny stand up in it. It has my favorite line of dialogue, which we'll probably talk about later when we do the subcategories. But my favorite line of dialogue floored me and just made me laugh for 10 minutes and feel very uncomfortable, but it's still my favorite line of dialogue in the entire year. And I love this movie, and the fact that this turned out to be a success is great. And everybody involved, Michael Showalter is the director of the movie. I do want to mention that. He did a wonderful job directing this movie. It's a terrific movie. So The Big Sick, number 12.
My number 12 is David Gordon Green's Stronger. As you guys know, I was the biggest David Gordon Green fan on the planet up until Your Highness. And then since then, I've been very cautiously optimistic about his movies ever since. And when I saw the trailer for Stronger, I was like, I've seen the pattern. The mainstream movies, with the exception of Pineapple Express, are not very good. But the art house, you know, the small quirky stuff that he usually does is really good. This looks like the former. And I was completely wrong about that. He took what was could have been, again, typical by the numbers, biopic, true story movie, centered around a guy who lost his legs when he was in the wrong place at the wrong time at the Boston Marathon bombing. And he's played by Jake Gyllenhaal, and his sort of road to recovery. And he managed to avoid a lot of the pitfalls of that kind of storyline of being, you know, phony and just kind of, you know, telling a typical story in a very typical way and not really letting the supporting characters get fleshed out or, you know, but he did it in a way that I think really only he could have, or, you know, a director of his intelligence could have. So this one really surprised me, and David Gordon Green movie shouldn't surprise me, I guess, but it was better than it really than I thought it was going to be, and anchored by two of, like, I mean, a lot of strong performances in this. I mean, Gyllenhaal, of course, Tatiana Maslany is great in it. I think she's kind of the unsung, you know, underrated hero.
I think she's an underrated hero in general.
Yeah, when it comes to acting. But like when we're talking about nominate people who should be nominated for awards this year, she's you know been forgotten, unfortunately. But this is a really terrific movie.
Okay, all right, hang on. Eric, hold on. We'll get your number 12 right after we take this break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Yeah, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it is, we're wrapping up the year here. The best movies of 2017. That, of course, is from The Last Jedi. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, always stop by. In studio to wrap up the movies, and so let's actually just jump right into your number 12. Eric.
Okay, well, this movie I am certain is going to come up again on Nick's list, but I might as well get the conversation started. And it's Phantom Thread, Paul Thomas Anderson's new film. And when I first heard that he was making a movie about the fashion industry, or it was just, you know, I cringe because every time I hear fashion industry, I think prêt-à-porter for some reason. I have a really horrible memory in my head, and I'm just like, I'm not interested in that. But this movie's not about the fashion industry. This movie, I mean, in the simplest terms, and I haven't said this out loud yet, but this is basically 50 Shades of Grey for adults.
That's exactly what my girlfriend said when we saw it tonight.
Yeah, this is sort of the ultimate, you know, submissive and dominant personalities at war with each other. Not in the same way that we see in those crap movies, but in a way that is unsettling, humorous. At times, nevertheless, than fascinating, and so many movies that I think we might even still bring up here when we talk about the role of the changing role of men and women in Hollywood society and things that are going on. And to watch this movie, and Daniel Day-Lewis has said he's retiring and he's going out on a very, very, very high note.
Oh, yeah,
but the standout for me in this movie was Vicky Krieps. Who plays this waitress who then becomes his lover in the film, or you know, I don't know if you can call her a lover. You never really see that too much in the movie, and seeing that, you know, the way that they sort of struggle for dominance in this relationship is just, it's again all those things that I mentioned. I know you're going to talk about it, Nick.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Colin said it was a good year for one-word titles. I'd also say it was a pretty remarkable year for Mushrooms. You know, not just in The Beguiled. And yeah, I mean, there's we can't talk about this movie in limited terms. So when you talk about it, we'll interact a little bit more. But it's great.
Yeah, it won't be for a little while yet.
Yeah.
So let's go to number 11 on my list. And I know that, Eric, you're going to think, maybe both of you are going to think that I have this too low. I struggled with where I was going to put this, but Dunkirk comes in at number 11. it's a remarkable piece of work, beautifully made, one of the best war movies I've seen, and meant to be seen either in 70. I think IMAX was the way to see this. You can't argue the talent and, you know, the craft that was put into this movie. Christopher Nolan likes to play around with time, and he still does it here. He didn't need to, but he did it, and it made it, I think, you know, an interesting way to tell the story. Historically significant, beautifully put together. Just great and sort of stunning filmmaking. And I know that we're going to hear about this one a little later on.
Not for a while.
So we'll let Eric handle all that. But outside of it, it's a great cinematic experience, and it was a joy to. I saw it twice. I saw it in 70, and I saw it in IMAX. But I have to say that 70 was the or IMAX was the way to see it. It was the perfect way to see it. So. Yeah, so Dunkirk, number 11. All right, Colin?
My number 11 was the biggest surprise I had all year, and it was almost a year ago, and that's Logan. I almost didn't go to the screening of this movie because I just had no interest in seeing another Wolverine movie. I couldn't remember a single thing that happened in the last two or three, however many Wolverine movies there were before this. I completely lost track of the whole series. I mean, X-Men in general, I just kind of like, I'm done. But I dragged myself to the screening anyway, and boy, was I knocked out. It shattered every expectation I had. Just right from the get-go, from the opening credits, I was like, this doesn't feel like a Marvel. Am I in the right theater? Where am I? This is not a Marvel movie. I'm just like, wow, they are going for the hard R violence. They're really using those claws for the impact that it should have. But it's an amazing character study, too. It's a great way for this character to go out. Daphne Keene is the kid. Where did this kid come from?
Yeah.
And just everything about it I loved. And I think you're right. I think I'm with you, Nick. I think this is my favorite comic book movie ever. Yeah. Because it just breaks all the rules that we expect from comic book movies today.
When it ended, I said, I've seen a movie that's better than Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, right.
High praise.
It is very high praise.
Yeah.
But this was.
I've seen it three times, and it knocks me out every time I watch it. It's a great, creepy, wonderful movie. And it is a horror movie. People are like, that's the kind of movie that it is. And I was blown away by it. And I hate the fact that everybody hates it.
Yeah.
But that number 10 on my list is It Comes at Night.
My number 10 is a movie that has been mentioned already. And it's, again, a franchise movie that takes risks. And it's War for the Planet of the Apes. I won't go into it too much because Eric pretty much said everything that there is to say. But I just want to say one thing that I really appreciate about this movie is Steve Zahn's contribution to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get Steve Zahn, you think, okay, we're gonna get him to do this goofy performance character because that's kind of what he's known for, primarily.
Yeah.
But his character is so odd and so sad and so funny, but in a way that you just don't expect from an actor like that.
It is a wonderful character and a wonderful performance.
It really is. It was the best addition to this franchise ever. And that's my number 10, War for the Planet.
I feel terrible that I didn't include that movie now.
Uh-huh.
No, I know. It's a great movie. I know. I understand.
Yeah, okay. I don't have Phantom Thread in mind. So.
What?
Yeah, uh-oh. Right? There you go.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
Okay. It's in my top 30.
Wow. All right.
It's in my 30.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. We got to take a break.
All right,
here.
Sit down.
Put the bat down. We're going to take a break here. We got weather, we got traffic, and then we'll come back with more. Eric and Colin are here, and we've got the rest of the movies to talk about. We're in our top 10 right now. And here is weather. I got the weather for you right here. And your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center today. Steady snow diminishing to flurries by the afternoon. Accumulations range between 2 and 5 inches. High near 23. Tonight, scattered snow showers and a low around 9. Tomorrow, Tuesday, partly cloudy and a high around 18. Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high near 20. And for Thursday, sunny and a high near 39. It's currently 19 degrees at O'Hare, 19 at Midway, 20 at the lakefront. Let's get a check on traffic with Esmeralda Leon.
Right now on the CTA, some Forest Park-bound Blue Line trains are operating with residual delays after an earlier sick customer at Jefferson Park. We're also watching inbound Dan Ryan. We're hearing reports of an accident at 75th Street. And just in general, we're seeing lots of delays because of the road work. You're mainly seeing it west of 294 on 355. I-88, 990, we're seeing heavier, as well as I-80 throughout. We're seeing slowdowns. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic's Chicago app approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Esmeralda Leon, WGN Traffic Central.
Holidays and a new year bring cherished moments and smiles we capture forever. This year, we're proud to celebrate our 10th year milestone of the famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars. A favorite gift amongst our listeners, this year's calendars are completely redesigned with a fresh new look and feel by our friends at 2Ks. With all the new stunning photography of our beautiful city, you can personalize any name you want with authentic realism. Imagine your recipient's name and prominent landmarks creatively illustrated in every month. Available now at WGNRadio.com. Give these calendars to coworkers, friends, friends and family. It's a practical and useful gift used every day of the year. Something your gift recipient will always remember you by. Go to WGNradio.com, scroll down to the featured section to order yours today. 2018 Epic Calendars for an epic year.
Get ready for a clean like you've never seen. Hi, this is Tonya Khoury of Green Tea Services. I promise you, carpet, tile, and hardwood floors cleaned like never before.
Service to a green tea.
Our Green Tea Services deep cleaning process leaves your carpets, tile, and hardwood floors cleaner and removes bacteria and mildew so your children can safely play on your green tea cleaned floor. Whether you have carpet, tile, or hardwood, call our Green Tea Crews with the green letter T on top of our trucks. They're known for courtesy and quality service.
Service to a green tea.
Clean up on savings. Call now. Get one room cleaned free. Plus, our 100% satisfaction green tea guarantee. For details on carpet, tile, and hardwood floor cleaning, call Green Tea now. Ask for our room cleaned free special. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green
tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA or greenteaservices.com.
Hey, sis, what's up?
Mom fell. Again.
What? Is she okay?
She's fine. This time. But Greg, I'm really worried.
When concern turns to worry, take a breath and get some information from Bright Star Care at 1-844-4-BRIGHTSTAR.
There's so much. I mean, just
a franchise movie that took risks, and I just love it.
Yeah. So. Cool. All right, 11, Eric.
My number 11 is the film that, when I walked in, it was probably the film I was dreading the most this year, to follow up with what Colin said. But it ended up being a pretty terrific film. And you mentioned already, Nick, it's Blade Runner 2049. Mm. I mean, I don't care how long this movie was. People are just like, you know, how dare you do a 162-minute Blade Runner movie? Yeah, because every minute counted in this movie. It's wonderfully emotional. Ryan Gosling, you mentioned, is fantastic in the movie. Great anchor for this film, and it told a fresh story that expanded upon ideas in the original, and then gave you new questions about the original too, without ever feeling like they were using it in any way. They wanted to extend the story. They clearly had great passion, the way that many of us Blade Runner fans have of that movie, and they didn't want to screw it up, and so they took their time and they let it play for over 2.5 hours, and then again gave us such a fantastic journey, and the idea of can you be human if you're not, and vice versa, and all these ideas again. And again, you mentioned the technical aspect of it that just goes without saying. Roger Deakins, if he doesn't win the Oscar this
ridiculous
year, just shut down the category because it's unbelievable. If the movie, my only complaint about the movie is that I wish it had a stronger climax. Them just kind of getting into a kick fight at the end, just like I could have had something stronger, but it ends on the right note after that.
Oh yeah.
If it didn't have that, I might actually have this movie higher, because I think it flowed beautifully, really well put together, and really an honor to join in the, you know, with the original film.
Yeah, that's great to hear you say that, considering how much you like the director.
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and wasn't his movie last year your number one?
Yeah.
Arrival. Arrival was number one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Made my top 20. I can't remember where it was, but it was in there. Didn't make yours,
not
though.
Mine.
No.
No. Amy Adams is a horrible person in that movie.
Okay. We're going to hit the top 10, but let's now do our bottom 10 here to remind everybody that so we can set up to go into the top 10 best movies of 2017. Number 20 on my list is The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Number 19 is Blade Runner 2049. Number 18 is Detroit. Number 17, Brad Status. Number 16, Logan. Number 15, The Post. Number 14, Wonder. Number 13, The Shape of Water. Number 12, The Big Sick. And number 11, Dunkirk. What are your bottom 10?
20, Columbus. 19, Mudbound. 18, Wonder. 17, A Quiet Passion. 16, Colossal. 15, Get Out. 14, Loveless. 13, Coco. 12, Stronger. 11, Logan.
All right, and Eric?
20, The Lego Batman Movie. 19, Baby Driver. 18, Mudbound. 17, The Post. 16, The Big Sick. 15, It Comes at Night. 14, Mother. 13, War for the Planet of the Apes. 12, Phantom Thread. And 11, Blade Runner 2049.
All right. Here we go. Top 10 movies of 2017. I'll start. Number 10 was mentioned already, and It Comes at Night. A remarkably uneasy film to watch that challenged people and pissed them off. I saw it on a Saturday afternoon in a theater in Skokie, and there were some women who were sitting in the front row, and when it ended, this one said, "I can't believe this. That's the worst movie I've ever seen in my life." It's dark, and it's ambiguous. You don't really know what's going on. Like, is this disease a thing that happened? I mean, what's going on? And it really is suffocating in the way that it's made. You know, like, it's, you're completely enveloped in this world, and it's a tight, cramped world, and. Not, you know, I mean, it's not action packed or anything like that, but the intensity with which the movie is acted and beautifully directed. I mean, just like, this is a good filmmaker. This is a smart, you know, really talented filmmaker who just, as far as I'm concerned, had the audience in the palm, or at least the audience that responded to it, like myself, palm of his hand. All the performances are absolutely great. The kid who plays their son, who I don't remember his name, but he's really great in this movie. It has an absolutely heartbreaking final shot, and just it's weird and it's scary, and it's a bit overwhelming. I've seen it three times now, and it oof. Really, yeah, no, I love it. I love it.
I know.
I've seen it three times, and it's just it knocks me out every time I watch it. It's a great, creepy, wonderful movie. And it is a horror movie. I you know, people are like, that's the kind of movie that it is. And I was blown away by it. And I hate the fact that everybody hates it.
Yeah.
But that number 10 on my list is It Comes at Night.
My number 10 is a movie that has been mentioned already. And it's, again, a franchise movie that takes risks. And it's War for the Planet of the Apes. I won't go into it too much because Eric pretty much said everything that there is to say, but I just want to say one thing that I really appreciate about this movie is Steve Zahn's contribution to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get Steve Zahn, you think, okay, we're going to get him to do this goofy performance character because that's kind of what he's known for, you know, primarily.
Yeah.
But his character is so odd and so sad and so funny, but in a way that you just don't expect from an actor like that.
And it is a wonderful character and a wonderful performance.
It really is. It is. And it was the best addition to this franchise ever. And that's my number 10, War for the Planet.
I feel terrible that I didn't include that movie now.
Uh-huh.
No, I know. It's a great movie. I know. I understand.
Yeah, okay. I don't have Phantom Thread in mind.
So. What?
Yeah, uh-oh. Right? There you go.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
Okay. It's in my top 30.
Wow. All right.
It's in my 30.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. We got to take a break.
All right,
here.
Sit down.
Put the bat down. We're going to take a break here. We got weather, we got traffic, and then we'll come back with more. Eric and Colin are here, and we've got the rest of the movies to talk about. We're in our top 10 right now. And here is weather. I got the weather for you right here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and it is our annual wrap-up of the movie year, and we are into our top 10 best movies of 2017. Colin Suter, Eric Childress are live here. Colin and I have both unveiled our 10th choice, number 10 on the list. Yeah. Now we're into Eric, starting in your top 10, Eric.
Well, tensions were rising a little high when you last left us, so I thought that, and I didn't change this, but no, my number 10 just happens to be, I think, is the first film to make all of our lists to date. My number 10 is Wonder.
Ah.
A film that, you know, I was looking forward to specifically for one reason, because I think Jacob Tremblay is an extraordinary talent.
He is.
Ever since I saw Room, which is a movie that emotionally wrecked me, and I think was on, well, I know it was on Colin on my top 10 list. I don't remember how high it was on.
It was on mine, yeah.
It was.
Absolutely.
A wonderful, one of the best child performances I've ever seen, and I think he's just about as good in Wonder. You know, I mean, we've seen movies about bullies. We've seen movies about illnesses. We've seen movies about families coming to terms with all those kind of things. And yet, all the credit in the world should go to Stephen Chbosky for the way he crafted this. Now, I understand the craft of it is partially done from the way the book is told. But it feels, there's real feeling in this movie. It doesn't feel false at any point throughout. There are emotional moments. I think I teared up as much in this as I did during Room. And there's one moment at a lake where knowing that you have people to back you up can be a very powerful thing, especially if you don't think you have that in your life.
Yeah.
And that moment that Jacob Tremblay has at the lake, just, I mean, I had to, I almost had to put the popcorn bucket on my head because I lost it in the theater. And again, it has beats that you expect in movies like this, but again, they don't feel false. They feel natural. They feel earned. Everyone in this movie is great. Wilson and Roberts, and again, the girl plays his sister. His friends and enemies in the movie are all really great. Just one of the most emotional experiences I had in a movie all year last year.
Well, there you go. All right, so we're in the top 10. My number 9 is Raw.
Bon appetit.
God, I love this movie. An insane French horror movie about a vegan girl who is hazed at a veterinarian school and told to eat raw meat like a gizzard. And she starts to develop a taste for raw meat and more. I love the lead performance in this movie, and I should have prepared by having the actress's name in front of me, but she is amazing. It's an amazing performance. There's a scene with a finger that I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that, and just like the that scene and the sister recognizing what's happening is one of my favorite moments in all of the whole year of movies. Yeah. This is a movie that you might not enjoy it.
You might.
We got a few of these.
Yeah. You might have some problems enjoying this movie. That it's one of those movies that I've seen everything in terms of horror movies, in terms of, you know, that there were scenes in this movie where I was just like, oh God, and like involuntarily like would get into, just like crawl like a baby while watching it. But it's exceedingly well made. It's very, very clever. It's surprising. It goes places that I never expected it to go, and it goes, man. It goes to these places. And again, this central performance is so strong. She's just great in it, and clearly not for everybody. But I think it's the 9th best movie of the year. So
this is the film that at the Toronto Film Festival in 2016, which is where I saw it, there were reports that people passed out and had to be carried out.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't buy it, or I think they're extraordinary wussies.
Yeah,
because I didn't have that kind of, I just kind of laughed my way through. In that kind of way,
in an uncomfortable way. Absolutely. Yes. That's the correct response is to go, oh God, and then laugh.
Right. Yes.
So Raw. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, number 9 for you.
So the title of my number 9 movie pretty much represents a lot of the reactions to Raw. So my number 9 is The Big Sick. we've talked about this already, but it is, by far the best romantic comedy of the year. Not a lot of romantic comedies this year, I guess.
Mother.
Now that I think about it.
Yeah, Mother.
Mother, yeah, sure. Okay, yeah. But this is, what happens when you get a lot of great talent. And, of course, it helps to have an inspirational true story as your, inspiration. I always like to put a movie like this on my top 10 list that is just effortlessly great. It's not trying. It's not reaching for the stars or anything like that. It's just something nice and effortless about how it's put together, how it's written, how it's acted, how it's directed. This is just one of the great pleasures of the year, and we'll be talking about it more in the subcategory list, definitely.
Okay.
So
Big Sick, number 9. All right, Eric.
My number 9 ended up on my top 10 list, not just because I really love it, but about 5% out of spite as well. And that's Star Wars The Last Jedi. To all the haters out there, all the people, you know, all of you little Kylo Ren wannabes out there, because that's what you are, shut up. Just shut up, because you have been given a gift with this movie. You have been given the future with this movie, a movie that central theme is kill the past. And it doesn't mean that you can't love all the previous Star Wars, prequels or not, whatever they might be. You can enjoy all of them at your leisure. And now Rian Johnson has laid the groundwork for something even greater. This is another movie that puts women to the forefront, which one of the many reasons probably why there's a backlash to this movie, because people are dumb. And you know, we talked about this movie at length a few weeks ago, and I would urge people to go back and listen to that the podcast from WGN Radio and watch us, you know, play with our toys as well. I also did a podcast about this for a few hours, and we talk at length about that with Sergio Mims and Eric Laws. I love this movie, and you know, Rian Johnson might be the best director the Star Wars series has ever had. I think that you can argue that point, and I can't wait to see what he's going to do with his own trilogy, and I'll be first in line for that.
All right. Okay, let's take a break here. Eric and Colin are here, and we are knocking down our top 10 best movies of the year. We got worst movies coming up and more, and subcategories as well, and more to get to. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is from that crowd pleaser mother. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We have an unfortunate Blackhawks Express to play back. But we are right in the middle of giving our lists for the best films of 2017. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every year to do this. And we are into our top 10. And we'll recap all of our top 20 in a little bit, but I'll recap my my first 10. The number 10 is It Comes at Night. Number 9 is Raw. Colin?
Number 10.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
My number 10 is War for the Planet of the Apes, and number 9 is The Big Sick.
Okay.
And my number 10 is Wonder, and my number 9 is Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Okay. Here we go. Number 8 for me, Lady Bird. Greta Gerwig's great directorial debut. Coming of age movie, Saoirse Ronan, who is just a gift. It's just a gift. Plays this girl. She calls herself Lady Bird. It's her final year of high school. She wants to get out of her town. She wants to go to New York. She wants to live a life. And it's about her coming of age, her romantic, interests, her best friend. And mostly the relationship between her and her mother, which is cantankerous at best. And the mother is played by the magnificent Laurie Metcalf, and the scenes between the two of them are great. Tracy Letts plays her dad. He's awesome. Timothy Chalamet, who had kind of a good year, is also in this movie. Lucas Hedges is also can play the romantic interests of this young girl. But it is clearly a personal film for Greta Gerwig, who really directed the hell out of this movie, and it's surprisingly well-made movie. And it was a movie that was told from a specifically female point of view, which I found really refreshing. And a lot of people, a lot of women that I know say that this is shockingly accurate in terms of how mothers and daughters react to one another and how they behave. Like one minute they're yelling at each other, and there's a wonderful moment in the movie where they're in a thrift shop they're looking for dresses, and you know, they're both like yelling at each other, "You're impossible," blah blah blah. And then Laurie Metcalf pulls out a dress, and they go, "Oh!" They both look at the dress, and they agree upon that. And then there's tons of stuff in the movie that is like that. And I just think it's a beautiful film. I think it's funny and really well acted. And I think Saoirse Ronan is just, she's just exquisite in every way. Great movie. So my number 8 is Lady Bird.
My number 8 is a documentary called The Work. And, you know, I'll tell you about the movie. It's a movie that takes place at Folsom Prison and this 4-day group therapy event among these prisoners and these people who come in from the outside to this prison to sort of engage in these therapy sessions. And what they get out of it is something intensely personal and, you know, a lot of inner demons coming out. And what these filmmakers got is something that is so emotionally raw and powerful. I was in tears throughout most of this film. It really threw me for a loop. What I was watching. I almost felt like I was right in there with these guys. It's really something to see. And what I just occurred to me, I did make a list of 10 or 15 of my favorite documentaries of the year. And it just occurred to me, like, looking at that list of, like, how marginalized or how forgotten sort of the documentaries have become in the last year. There weren't a lot of big releases for documentaries, and I'm worried about that trend. I know we have a lot more film studios out there, a lot of independent studios out there that are just buying up documentaries at film festivals, and we don't see a lot of them until, or hear about a lot of them until the end of the year when they send us, you know, screener links. And, you know, so many gems have just gotten buried and, you know, just haven't really been given much exposure. And this is one of those movies that, you know, it could have easily been missed. So I really wanted to make sure I mentioned it. It's called The Work. I don't know. I should have researched and see if it's available for streaming out there.
I don't think yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, people definitely need to see this movie. It's amazing.
Okay. All right. Eric?
My number eight is The Florida Project, Sean Baker's film about a mother and daughter living in a hotel, kind of a, you know, rundown project-like hotel, the kind of thing that you see on your way to Disneyland and tend to ignore. And that's a large portion of what this movie is about. It's not making critiques on these people. It's not making critiques on us for ignoring these people. It's really a slice of life, and it's a slice of life that we don't get to see that often. And it's told mostly through a child's eyes. A wonderful young actress played by named Brooklyn Prince, who, when the first time I saw the movie, took me a while to like the kids, because they do some really horrible bad kid things early on in this movie, and so it took me a while. I'm just like, well, these are really bad kids. I don't know if I like them. And the longer the movie went on, I'm like, well, these are kids. These are what kids do, and it's not, you know, they get reprimanded for it. But then it's also the heart of this movie is Willem Dafoe, who plays the hotel manager, the put upon hotel manager who has to deal with people screaming at him all day, chasing down rent, doing his managerial duties, and kids just coming in and out and bugging him and all kinds of things. He has one of the great scenes of the year where he sees a threat to the children. And this extended sequence to me is hypnotic. And Willem Dafoe's performance in this movie, I think, is one of the best he's ever given. I think that there is, you're watching an ordinary guy who just wants to just sort of smoke and watch the ball game and do his job, but has to deal with all these things. But there's a real empathy towards these people in the film that he has to be tough with, but he tries to help them out the best he can. And it has it leads up to a very difficult but a very affecting ending that's hopeful, but maybe not at the same time. It's a wonderful piece of work with Dafoe and Prince, and the woman who plays her mother, Bria Venete, I think is how you pronounce her name, all really good in this movie.
All right. My number seven is I, Tonya, which is, I think, one of the most ridiculously entertaining movies of the year. It's very funny, extremely well made, tells the story of the whole incident that took place in the early 90s, you know, between Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding, and it tells the story from Tonya Harding's point of view, played beautifully by Margot Robbie. It talks about her relationship with Jeff Galooly. and the idiots that she surrounded herself with to pull off this stunt where they're going to crack Nancy Kerrigan in the, you know, with a pipe and near. And we've all, you know, we all know this story. We're all there. We remember it and how much of a big news item it was, and everybody was talking about it. And then, but we really don't know what goes on, what really is behind this, what happened. And we still don't know, even after this movie, because it was told from the point of view of, like, stories that are contradictory, and, you know, they break the fourth wall and they talk to the audience. Sometimes I find that annoying, but not here. Allison Janney plays her mom, won the Golden Globe, will be nominated for Best Supporting Actress without question, and she's phenomenal in it. You know, the director clearly has watched a lot of Scorsese. It's very slick in terms of the way it's shot, the way it's cut. The use of music is phenomenal in this movie. And, you know, I mean, she, you know, which at the end of the movie, you don't know. You know what? She's a victim. She may be a victim here. I mean, she surrounded herself with morons. And also just the little glimpses into her life are powerful and sometimes sad and sometimes really funny. And you know, the statement that this movie makes about class is an important one, you know? And I think that's the core of what this movie is really about. And then just on the simplest of levels, it's funny, man. It's really funny. And very entertaining, and not the kind of movie that I thought it was going to be. When I first heard about it, I was like, come on. What? It's going to be about a Tonya Harding movie? Come on. And then it's just right out of the gate. It's different than anything, you know, that you would expect. So, yeah. And I think, maybe besides Baby Driver, the best soundtrack of the year. So, all right, we got a break here. Come back, and we'll get back into this, and we'll get your top seven. That's Eric and Colin. We'll take a break, and we got weather and traffic, and I got the weather for you right here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. This is music from Wonder, which appears on all three of our lists as one of the best movies of the year. And I'm telling you, if you would have told me that earlier this year, that I would have included this movie, Wonder, on my top 20, I would say no, but it's a terrific movie. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here, and we are into our top 10, so let's keep it going. And we'll recap a little bit later on. But so we're back with number 7. Colin, what is your number 7?
Well, we almost had a match. My number 7 is The Florida Project. Mm. And, yeah, everything Eric said about it, I completely echo. I think what Sean Baker has pulled off with this movie, and what he pulled off with Tangerine as well, is a movie that I feel like I'm watching a documentary. That's how raw and real it feels, watching these characters, you know, even though Willem Dafoe is there, and, you know, of course we recognize him, but it still feels like I'm watching a piece of American life that I'm eavesdropping in on, and I shouldn't be eavesdropping in on some of this stuff. It's very uncomfortable. It's an extraordinary experience, a very unique one for this year, but yeah, The Florida Project is
okay. Number seven, Eric.
Seven is a film that's been brought up twice before, and it's Logan, James Mangold's. Again, I agree that it's maybe not my favorite superhero movie or comic book movie, but it's absolutely up there, maybe top three. We mentioned how this movie is kind of a Western. We've talked about the violence in the movie, and the violence in the movie never feels like a gimmick. Like oh, we got an R rating now, we're going to go for the R rating, we're just going to do it. I mean, from the first attack at the beginning of the movie to the run up through the forest at the end, every blade connects, and it connects through us in a remarkable way. The action sequences in this movie are terrific. The violence is terrific. But, you know, these are the kind of movies that, you know, guys like John Wayne, and even some, we're seeing a lot of guys now get these sort of career-type performances and whatnot. And we've talked about how Hugh Jackman has committed to this character from, you know, this is his breakthrough character, and he's remained loyal to it. But Hugh Jackman is not as old as these other guys. Hugh Jackman is still Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Okay? And so he's playing an older version. I mean, the guy's over 200 years old, but he's playing an older version of this character and doing it in a way that I think ranks with as good as any of the performances we saw last year. And also props to Patrick Stewart, who, in playing Professor Xavier, gets to play him in a completely different way that we didn't see, and has a monologue in this movie that is heartbreaking. Again, this movie is funny, it is remarkably violent, and it is awesome.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Number 6 on my list is A Ghost Story. Which is a very unusual film that we've talked about before. It stars Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck as a couple that lives in this house And so they're basically what happens is he dies in a car accident, but comes back to life as a ghost, the typical sort of ghost with the sheet over his head and the eye holes, and goes back to haunt this house, essentially, and witness what is happening as Rooney Mara continues with her life. It's a really fascinating movie. David Lowery wrote and directed it, and he's quite a talent. And this is a strikingly original movie that on paper shouldn't work, but it does. And it's very emotional and really quite beautiful and kind of devastating. And I'm sure we're going to hear about it again. So we can just move on. But that's my number six, A Ghost Story.
My number six is an animated movie called Your Name, which came out back in April. This is a really great, really beautiful, original story about these two teenagers who inhabit each other's lives as when they sleep. And they wake up not remembering what the other person did. It's a really hard thing to explain. I'm not going to try to explain it fully on this show right now because we have to move on. But it is I was so with these two characters, and I just every little twist and turn was just made it either more delightful or more, you know, where I was just kind of rooting for them to find each other, or it was more romantic, or, you know, just and all the story elements just came together beautifully in this movie. You know, animated, you know, Japanese animated movies are, you know, they've been kind of, we haven't really seen too many of them, at least, you know, that aren't from the Studio Ghibli studio, but. This one is really a remarkable piece of work and a great piece of fantasy storytelling that I just loved all three times I saw it.
Okay. All right, number six, Eric.
My number six is Colossal, a film that when I first saw it, struck with what Colin mentioned, the extraordinary originality of it. You know, a monster rom-com, if you will, that... When I first saw it, I initially got angry at because of the turn that it takes. Not the supernatural turn that, if you don't know what it is, you know, just discover it. But it takes turns later in the movie that I was not angry, but disappointed, only because I wanted to see it go in a certain direction. And then the more I thought about it, and then seeing it again, recognized what this movie was really sane and what it was really doing. And when I watched it a third time, you want to talk about timely movies. This film has a statement about men and women. And, you know, I mean, we could talk about alcoholism and codependency, like Colin mentioned, but the dynamic between men and women this film feels prescient, is what it actually does. And it leads to it's very funny. It's scary in a way that's unexpected throughout. I think Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis give career best performances in this movie. It's a movie. It's one of those under the radar movies that I love to tell people about. Colossal's my number six.
Okay, my number five is Mother. Darren Aronofsky's certifiable insane movie. Eric mentioned it before. I love this movie, and you know, like you said, the way it's shot, it is just it's a movie that will maybe drive you nuts while you're watching it, but in a good way. I think Jennifer Lawrence is great in this movie, and she's like in every shot. It's all told from her point of view. I think all the acting is really good. It's beautifully made. People hated it. But I think it's scary and weird and intense and funny. there's a lot of funny stuff in this movie. And I think it's one of Aronofsky's best movies. Pissed a lot of people off. People didn't know what to make of it, but it's weird and crazy and, allegorical and nuts and just crazy. And I love it. So Mother, number five on my list.
My number five is Star Wars: The Last Jedi. And yeah, I'm with Eric, obviously, with, you know, telling all the haters to just go away. This movie, echo everything Eric said. One of my favorite scenes of the year is a very non-Star Wars scene. It's the scene between Carrie Fisher and Laura Dern.
Yeah.
I love that scene so much. But I love everything else in this movie too. I love where Rian Johnson is taking this story and this series, and I can't wait to see what he does next. And I'm so on board with it. And I've seen it 3 times, and I love it more and more every time. So yeah, haters, go away.
All right, that's number five. Yeah. Number five for you, Aaron.
It feels like our Star Wars show all over again, because my number five is Call Me by Your Name, which we talked about on that very episode. Luca Guadagnino. Adaptation of a book about this remembrance from like 1983, where Timothée Chalamet's character becomes infatuated with an older, he's still a young man, but Armie Hammer in his early 20s, working for his father. And this movie, I saw this movie at Sundance, and it really struck me. Watching it again, struck by just how careful this movie is in constructing this relationship. It doesn't go headfirst into it. It takes its time. It sets its boundaries. And then when they finally get together, there's real passion, and you know, it's a really sexy movie. And you know, as movies about remembrances and vacations and coming of age things, people really like Lady Bird, obviously. This movie, the way that their relationship is handled, and then culminated by this remarkable monologue by Michael Stuhlbarg that then potentially reveals more things about his character that we haven't seen much throughout the film. Is really, again, another sort of important, timely kind of story, with a final shot that plays over the final credits that is absolutely devastating. And I think that we can all relate to that final shot, whatever that kid is thinking of at the end of the movie. I think we've all been there at some point. So Call Me by Your Name is my number five.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we'll get all the rest of our movies, our four best movies of the year. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN and more after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're at the top here. We are about to unveil our four best movies of 2000, top four best movies of 2017. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me, and we do this annually. So let's do this. We'll jump right back into it, and then we'll recap our top 20 before we get you out of here. All right, my number four best movie of the year is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Martin McDonagh's outstanding drama about a woman played by Frances McDormand whose daughter was raped and murdered. The police in this town of Ebbing, Missouri have not found the killer, so she takes out three billboards going after the police and questioning them. The chief of police is played by Woody Harrelson, and his deputy is played by Sam Rockwell. And it's about this conflict between this woman who wants justice and this police department and the people surrounding them, her ex-husband, her son. And it's a great performance by Frances McDormand, I think the best of the year. And Sam Rockwell, who won the Golden Globe, is amazing in this movie and has an arc that's incredible. It's magnificent writing, it's beautiful acting, and it's really well directed. It's a great film, and it's my fourth favorite movie of the year, Three Billboards.
My number four is Dunkirk. And I won't say too much because I know we haven't heard the last of it. But I agree with Nick. It's the IMAX is the way to see it. I'm glad I saw all three ways to see this movie, and IMAX was the best. And really, just the visceral feeling of being in in the plains. I've never felt that way when watching a movie like in this way before. So it's another great, brilliant masterpiece from Christopher Nolan, and I'm just blown away every time I saw it.
Okay. Number four, Eric?
My number four is a film that criminally didn't get the attention I was hoping it would, especially towards the end of the year, and that's Lucky. John Carroll Lynch's tribute, in a way, to Harry Dean Stanton, who plays this 90-year-old atheist who has an episode where he falls down. And he goes to the doctor, and he just finds out he's old. You know, he's just old, and but then begins to think about the end, think about what might be coming after. You know, is death right around the corner? And he does this through a series of encounters in his neighborhood, in his local bar, diner, waitress that comes to visit him. It's an extraordinary performance by Stanton, and a film that... You know, just every monologue, every conversation in this movie, everyone coming to terms with what they believe might be headed for us next out there is really profound stuff in this movie. It's also very funny. David Lynch has monologues in this movie that are just ridiculously hilarious. And again, I can't, you know, and it's even more powerful now knowing that Stanton passed away not long after this movie came out. I hope it's not the last we're hearing about it tonight, but if it is, number four is Lucky.
Okay. My number three is Baby Driver. Edgar Wright's phenomenal movie, extraordinarily well made and so entertaining. And just the concept of, you know, like making a musical car chase movie, heist movie. And he pulls it off. The opening 15 minutes, if you're not hooked during the opening 15 minutes, you're nuts. And it just gets better from there. The entire cast is great. I actually like Jamie Foxx in it, and I'm not a Jamie Foxx fan. I think everybody is really great in this movie. It's a wonderful sort of romantic movie, too. There's a nice love story there and a nice relationship between he and his deaf foster care father. And it just works on every level. It's a great heist movie, a great action movie, incredible soundtrack, beautifully made. This is filmmaking at its peak. And so my number three is Baby Driver.
My number three is one you just mentioned, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I mean, this is, you know, peak screenwriting. This is the best, you know, acting ensemble we've seen all year. This is just one of those movies that I wish, I hope it's, I can call it a classic someday. To, you know, backlashes be damned. Movies aren't really allowed to become classics anymore because we have to have, you know, everybody's got to have, you know, bring movies down a peg. But this movie, I don't care. This is a huge pleasure to watch every single time I see it. And McDormand and Harrelson and everybody in it is just phenomenal. And we're going to talk about it more in our subcategories. Some of my favorite dialogue exchanges in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's just great.
All right. Number three.
It took us this long, but we have a match.
Three
Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is also my number three. I won't go into it too much because you guys have already talked about it wonderfully so far. But I will say that, you know, this movie is turning into the most misunderstood film of the year. There is, I mean, I don't even like to call it a backlash. I think there's just a complete misreading of things that are going on in this movie, particularly involving the Rockwell character, as if, you know, this movie forgives him for anything he's done, or are we condemning him for things that we only think he's done? You know, there's a lot of things going on in this movie. This movie is about discovering that we don't have all the answers, that, you know, in our seek for justice and peace, that we often get things wrong. We often lash out at the wrong thing. And this movie is, people want to say this movie is about, you know, empathy. It's more about anger. And you know, there's an angry streak that goes throughout this movie, and I'm angry at the people who are completely misreading this, and then misreading the people who, like us, who really think it's one of the best movies of the year, which it absolutely is.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, number two on my list is Phantom Thread. Paul Thomas Anderson's latest. He's my favorite filmmaker. It is a remarkable piece of work with two amazing performances. And what you said earlier about it is this sort of this battle between these two personalities. The thing about this movie is that it's sweeping, it's gorgeous, it's mysterious, it's weird. By Paul Thomas Anderson clearly watched Rebecca a bunch of times, influenced by many different directors. It's beautifully photographed. I can't say enough about Vicky Krebs. She's unbelievable in this movie. Unbelievable. Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously, he rules. And you're battling back and forth. It's also very surprising. There's something that happens towards the end of this movie where I'm like, what? but it's mounted in such a beautiful way. And it's Paul Thomas Anderson. And, you know, he's a remarkable filmmaker, and I've seen it twice, and it got better. It was even better the second time. It's rich and weird and lovely. and my kind of romantic movie. So, all right, number
and
two.
People really got to see it at the Music Box in 70mm.
Yeah.
It's amazing. My number two is A Ghost Story. David Lowery's very poetic, odd, hard to describe movie about death, what we leave behind, what we can't leave behind, and you know what we can't take with us. And it's just, I have just a really deep personal connection to this movie, and a lot of the things that I'm confounded by it. There's things about it that I've not been able to figure out, and I think that's great. I think it gets richer with every viewing. And, this is just... I can't wait to see what David Lowery does next.
Yeah, terrific movie. Number two.
My number two is Dunkirk. Cool. Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Is that even more surprising than the post at 17? Maybe.
A little bit.
You guys have talked about this movie so well already, and... You know, Christopher Nolan's obsession with his theme of time, he finds another new way to explore it in this movie and uses it in a way that is both horrific and a way to honor soldiers who never had a chance, in a way. This movie just a constant barrage, and the way he shows us the degrees of time in this movie and then... slowly brings them all together by the end. We've said suffocating. We might have said breathless at some point in this thing. It's all these things. And the idea that he hasn't been an emotional filmmaker all these years, he's only been getting more emotional with his films, each subsequent one, and this film has an unbelievable emotional payoff at the end. I mean, this is a film about retreat. This is a film about people not fighting, but running away. And as they say at the end of the movie, sometimes that's enough. And if you let the historians talk about the significance of this, I will just talk about the significance of this movie. And it's absolutely one of the best of the year. Another absolute home run from Christopher Nolan.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Number one. I had to pick the movie. Then I was switching stuff around. I had to pick the movie that had the biggest effect on me. And a movie that I personally was really kind of blown away by. Colossal is number one. It's not only, as you mentioned, incredibly original. The most original movie of the year, as far as I'm concerned. I happen to love giant monster movies, so it's got that. And I think Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis, Tim Blake Nelson, everybody in this movie is remarkable. It's fun. It's weird. It's totally original and beautifully acted. And it is also, personally for me, a movie that had a massive effect on me. It is, you talked about the relationships between men and women, which is also what this movie is about. But it's one of the most effective and powerful movies ever made about alcoholism and codependency, ever. I know it's allegorical in that way, but it really affected me deeply. And I've seen it seven or eight times, and it kills me every time I watch it. It just really... And you know that turn that you're talking about? That turn is important in the movie because that happens in real life, man. That's what it is. That's what's happening. The Jason Sudeikis character is real. And anybody who has gone through any kind of struggles with addiction or alcohol, that Jason Sudeikis character is there. He's there every single day. Every time you wake up, Sudeikis' character is there. And it captures it incredibly powerfully. Also, greatest final shot of the year, which is just it's funny, and it's like, oh, God, when and it ends on that note, and I think it's a damn near perfect movie. So I had to go, there's a lot of great movies on this list, and a lot of great movies that could have been at the top, but this is the one that hit me the most, personally. And so Colossal is my favorite film of the year. So
my favorite film of the year is John Carroll Lynch's Lucky. The last time I watched it, I was just kind of beside myself all over again by just how simple and pure and perfect every single scene is. I talked before about The Big Sick being sort of effortless, and I think that's kind of how this is too, but in the best possible way. It's a beautiful tribute. It's a beautiful film about life. It's a beautiful film about death. It accomplishes so much in, 85, 90 minutes? Every single scene in it just moves me in one way or another. David Lynch's monologue about his pet tortoise is the highlight of the year for me. I cry every time I hear it. It's so beautiful. Like Eric said, this did not get the kind of attention it deserved. It's my number one.
Okay. All right, Eric, number one.
Oh, well, it seems like we've all picked films that have affected us personally in some way, and my number one is A Ghost Story, David Lowery's film, nearly silent film. I mean, it's remarkable on a technical level. There isn't a lot of dialogue in it, save for a few scenes between Mara and Affleck, and this really big sort of monologue in the middle of it that does kind of spell a lot of things out for you. But I think that
by the way, for the record, I'm not bothered by that monologue at all.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's because it's a great monologue. But even though that, that it might spell a few things out, this is a movie about time and the passage of time. And, you talk about Lucky. I mean, this actually, I wonder how Lucky would have reacted to seeing this movie. maybe this is what happens to you when you die, that if you miss your window, that you're left, just aimless in eternity, looking for purpose, looking for a way out, looking for the smallest little things, like a piece of paper in a wall means something extraordinary to something. And I think that's something that affects all of us. And you lose people in life, and you see a movie like this and told with such delicacy and purpose. Even though it's not traditional in any sense of the way, it can really have a profound effect, and this one absolutely did.
It's a beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. All right, well, there we go. Let me quickly. We'll recap all of our top 20, and then we're done. Right, Dan? Yeah. Okay. And then we'll just do we'll do the podcast thing soon. So all right, here we go. Number 20, Killing of a Sacred Deer. 19, Blade Runner 2049. 18, Detroit. 17, Brad Status. 16, Logan. 15, The Post. 14, Wonder. 13, The Shape of Water. 12, The Big Sick. 11, Dunkirk. 10, It Comes at Night. 9, Raw. 8, Lady Bird. 7, I, Tonya. 6, A Ghost Story. 5, Mother. 4, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. 3, Baby Driver. 2, Phantom Thread. And number 1, Colossal.
All right, number 20, Columbus. Number 19, Mudbound. 18, Wonder. 17, A Quiet Passion. 16, Colossal. 15, Get Out. 14, Loveless. 13, Coco. 12, Stronger. 11, Logan. 10, War for the Planet of the Apes. Number 9, The Big Sick. Number 8, The Work. Number 7, The Florida Project. Number 6, Your Name. Number 5, Star Wars The Last Jedi. Number 4, Dunkirk. Number 3, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Number 2, A Ghost Story. And number 1, Lucky.
All right. Eric?
My number 20, The Lego Batman Movie. 19, Baby Driver. 18, Mudbound. 17, The Post. 16, The Big Sick. 15, It Comes at Night. 14, Mother. 13, War for the Planet of the Apes. 12, Phantom Thread. 11, Blade Runner 2049. 10, Wonder. 9, Star Wars The Last Jedi. 8, The Florida Project. 7, Logan. 6, Colossal. 5, Call Me By Your Name. 4, Lucky. 3, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. 2, Dunkirk. And number 1, A Ghost Story.
All right. Well, there it is. Those are our lists. We are going to do an extra bonus here of a podcast that you can only get on at WGNRadio.com, and that's all of our subcategories. All the subcategories, biggest surprises, best this, best that. So all the subcategories, we're going to do a podcast. And Eric Childress and Colin Suter, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
And always a pleasure every year. We'll do it again next year, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Can't wait.
Okay, we'll take a break here. We got weather, we got traffic, and my dad will call it Intellijokey, Jokey, Jokey time right here on 720 WGN.